Hi, I'm Sophie, and this is Age Well with Dr. Sophie Schotter, a space where, together with my producer, Fee, I talk to good friends and trusted experts on how they age well, whether it's their latest supplement stack, what's on their bathroom shelf, or a new biohacking device that really seems to work. Because for me, aging well is all about looking and feeling like the best possible version of ourselves, both inside as well as out. Remember, you can also find even more ideas and expert tips on my social channels at Dr. Sophie Schotter. I'd love you to come and join me over there too. So this is my show. Welcome along. As always, thank you so much for listening. And this week, Fee and I are in conversation with Francesca White. Francesca, many people will know you as Tatler's health and beauty editor at large, but you're also founder of The Beauty Triangle, which I'm privileged to be a member of. Can you explain The Beauty Triangle? What is it? Why did you found it? And who is it for?
Oh, thank you, Sophie. And so lovely that I hear that you enjoy being a part of it. That's music to my ears. When I set up The Beauty Triangle, it was off the back of being a journalist. I was Tatler's health and beauty director. I still actually work at the magazine as a contributing editor. So I've been there for about 15 years. But my predominant areas of interest were aesthetics and cosmetic surgery, but also the other side of the coin, which is wellness and spa. And what I felt very strongly was that these two conversations were sort of being put in opposite corners of the room, and they were never really interacting with one another. So I came up with the idea of the beauty triangle as a way to bring people together and educate them about their well-being in a very holistic manner. So to explain that a little bit more, we host monthly events. We host a big annual festival at 180 Studios. We're planning to do a few more of those. We're also in Dubai now twice a year. We turn all of our conversations into podcasts. They're sort of on YouTube. They're hosted on our website. But the idea being that we always have this sort of 360 approach to a conversation. So whether we're talking about mental health or plastic surgery or menopause or fertility, we always have three experts. So you might have, for example, a dermatologist, you might have a nutritionist, and then you might have a manual lymphatic drainage expert. But the idea being that the consumer always takes away a really synergistic and balanced, impartial perspective on, I suppose, the conversation that we're addressing. It's been going for about 5 years now, and it's been such a joy and a pleasure to see it grow and evolve.
And still going strong. Yeah, congratulations from me as well. What's your experience been like as an entrepreneur, including the main challenges and any advice you'd give anyone? And I guess linked to this question is another one on how you manage your time.
Oh my goodness, it's such a massive question, isn't it? I'll come to the time management, and that's definitely something I am really still trying to optimize myself. But being an entrepreneur is an interesting one, and it's very difficult. I would say the main challenge I had to overcome was sort of that voice in my head that was sort of telling me that I couldn't do this, and that it wouldn't work, and that there wouldn't really be any longevity in it. And I think a lot of us get that, and you can call that imposter syndrome, you can call that self-doubt, you can call it low self-confidence. And I was definitely a very shy individual, certainly before I came into journalism. And I think a huge part of this journey for me was almost stepping away from that brand name, Condé Nast, you know, Tatler magazine, which it's an amazing publication. And it has been so formative in me being able to set up the Beauty Triangle and discover that professional confidence and really carve out something very unique in the sector. But it's also very easy when you're attached to a big brand name like a Condé Nast to allow that brand name to walk into a room before you and to find a lot of comfort in being associated with a huge household brand that everybody knows and that, you know, let's face it, opens doors, you know. And then in many ways, that is such a privilege to be a part of. But there was definitely a big moment where I thought, oh my goodness, you know, I've in a sense got to step away from this, and I can't fall back on the big publishing house that I've always been associated with. If I'm going to do this, I need to do this in my own way. I need to stand on my own two feet, and I need to create something that has value outside of the company that I've always been connected to in my professional world. So that was a really big hurdle to overcome. And I honestly have to say, you know, it's a lot of it then boils down to just having really supportive colleagues, friends, family. My partner was instrumental in this, but people who really do reinforce that sense of, you know, you can do this and you have done it and you've been doing it and this is your next step. It's a bit of a leap of faith, isn't it, when you, yeah, you start these things.
Yeah, yeah. And the time management piece, because that's also a challenge.
It is. And you know, interestingly, I did this sort of like post-pregnancy revival sort of journey a while back. And bear with me because it sounds a little bit convoluted, but I saw this fantastic chiropractor. He's called Ben Carraway. And I was really there to get my posture back post-pregnancy. But the way that Ben works is so multifaceted and again, holistic. And it's not just about how you're standing and the exercises you're doing in the gym. It really is about every aspect of your day. And he was the first individual who said to me, when it comes to your time management, it's not about trying to fit multiple things into your day. I mean, I'm the person with the never-ending to-do list. And my husband literally laughs at me when he says, how are you getting on with this? And I say, it's on my to-do list. And he laughs and says, well, basically, that's not going to happen for another year then, because it's, you know, 1,000 items long. But Ben Carraway was the first man who said to me, you need to be tracking your time in terms of your energy. And that's really stuck with me. And that is exactly what I do now. And it's how I make sure I get the big stuff done. So the time when I am the most productive, the most energized, is weirdly first thing in the morning. So bearing in mind, I also have a toddler. I try to get up a little bit earlier, you know, an hour or two before I know he's going to be up. And if I have a big pitch to write, a big proposal, I have a big feature that I'm trying to wrap my head around, those early hours of the morning are when I have the most energy and I plow it into that. Afternoon, bit of a slump, maybe I've had a big lunch or, you know, it's just been a draining sort of morning thus far. That's when I turn my attention to the smaller sort of emails and the little bitty things. So I think it's really just tracking the energy throughout the day and trying to make sure the work correlates to that somewhat.
Yeah. Oh, great tip. Thank you.
I don't know if it helps anyone other than me. I mean, it probably feels fairly basic, but honestly, it was a eureka moment when I discovered it.
Yeah.
I think it's so important to find whatever works for you. But I love the simple things are the ones that tend to work really well.
I agree.
Given your experience, Fran, I'd love to get into your morning and evening routine. So any specific brands, ingredients, products that you love? Again, mostly for face, but if you have any hero products for hair, nails, body, we're poised and ready to listen.
where do I begin? If you saw my bathroom cabinet, I mean, you'd probably be horrified / like completely delighted, because there's always a million and one things in there. And, you know, some of my sort of diehard favorites and others are things that I'm just dipping into and testing, you know, new product that comes to market and I want to experiment, obviously. But I'm a creature of habit somewhat, and I do know what works for my skin fundamentally. And I think that's really important. I know, for example, I'm somebody whose skin anyway enjoys simplicity. So I don't overload it with loads of products. I really am a cleanser, serum, SPF kind of girl. To the extent that I actually forego moisturizer a lot of the time, I'll be honest, I've never felt that my skin really needs it. But I'm an absolute devotee at the moment of, and in fact, Soph, you got me onto this brand, Clinical Skin. They've got this really beautiful cream cleanser, and it's by HA and antioxidants and all sorts. And it smells amazing. And my husband steals it now, which I think is the real litmus test. So I always start with that in the morning. Always an antioxidant serum, a sea ferulic for my skin works beautifully. I know it's not everyone's bag, but for me, vitamin C is fantastic, nice and brightening, really keeps my pigmentation at bay. An HA serum, in all honesty, I will use any brand. I'm not really that fussy when it comes to an HA. I am using one right now from Clinical Skin, but I've also got another SkinCeuticals serum on the go. And then, like I said, I've got all of that HA in the mix. So I don't really use a moisturizer. I've got quite sort of normal, quite balanced skin, but I do always slap on a lot of SPF. And the brand that I'm really liking right now is, and I don't know if you've heard of it, Sif, it's a brand called Sensilis, and it's come over from Spain. And it's excellent because it's sort of designed for sensitive skin, but it's still highly targeted. So they've got an amazing range of SPFs, and I'm using one of them at the moment. I don't remember which one it is terribly, but it's got a lovely consistency. It's really lightweight. It's an SPF 50, no white residue. And then if I want something with a little bit more of a tint, I use Sarah Chapman's Skin Insurance, which it's sort of just like a lovely tinted glow enhancing SPF. And then I sort of feel like, you know, you apply it with your fingers. It's sort of halfway done the job to putting on a bit of a base for your makeup. And you can sort of walk out the door and feel fairly fresh faced. So In terms of my face, that's probably it. And that's probably as complicated as I get. My hair is very, very boring. It's very simple. Again, it loves the simplicity. So I love an Orbe shampoo and conditioner. And then in terms of body, what do? Dry body brushing every morning. Literally my go-to. It really energizes me. It makes my skin feel alive. Hop in the shower if I can bear it. If it's not already too freezing, I try and do a bit of a cold shower at the end. And then lots of body lotion or a body oil. I love the Augustine Spada one at the moment. That's delicious. That's actually made it into my sort of temporary accommodation as we're moving house. So I have to be very selective about the products that came with me.
I'm loving this, Liz. Thank you so much. What about injectables and tweakments? What do you feel really works? Is there anything as well that you're excited by that's coming down the pipeline?
It's an interesting one. And I feel like injectables are getting a huge amount of airtime at the moment in these conversations. Certainly the conversations that we host through the Beauty Triangle. Obviously, there is a very mainstream narrative right now, which is saying that we're moving away from traditional fillers, which I actually disagree with. I always get asked the question, you know, what is the one treatment that makes the biggest difference to you? And hand on my heart, I always say it's very artfully done dermal filler. And now I know that obviously product placement is critical, and I'm a huge believer, as I'm sure you can imagine, in the power of having the relationship with the practitioner who knows your face and does it beautifully. But I can never quite put my finger on it when I've done it. I always look like myself again, rather than the sort of bedraggled, disheveled, exhausted, hasn't slept for long enough version, which otherwise is looking back at me from the mirror. In terms of newness, I mean, there's this whole, and again, I think, you know, Soph is a big sort of proponent of this right now, that the PRP filler, which is super interesting. So essentially almost creating a filler from our autologous sort of resources. And again, I think this is going to be, I mean, we're already on the cusp of it right now, but it's a really exciting chapter in aesthetics, you know, starting to look at our own body, our own natural resources. We already know about collagen stimulators. We already know about PRP, essentially sort of taking the growth factor rich platelets from our blood and re-injecting those and really stimulating, you know, healthier skin and tissue and whatnot. But I think, you know, we've got categories like autologous exosomes coming out. We've got the PRP filler. So there's lots of really exciting and very subtle, natural ways, I think, that we can still be pursuing these injectable treatments, but perhaps without the sort of anxiety that some patients might feel, particularly new patients and newcomers to this category in some of the more traditional products. Mm. So, it's a real tipping point right now, I think, in injectables.
I completely agree. I think exciting possibilities, but the tried and trusteds very much still have their place.
100%. And they need to. And I think anybody who says, you know, fillers out is, they're sort of missing a trick. And again, it goes back to the synergy that we always try to underline at the Beauty Triangle. It's a little bit of everything. It's that balanced approach. You know, I would never say that toxin and filler are out and it's all about polynucleotides. I love polynucleotides. I mean, honestly, nothing wipes away the sort of grayness and the sallowness under my eyes, the puffiness. Nothing really sort of works like that injection of concealer almost like a polynucleotide on my face, on my skin anyway. But I'd be silly if I said that was the only thing, because it's not. And we need to recognize that every product has a very specific role in what it does for us in the short term, but also in the long term. And the synergistic effects of all these things work in sort of combination are what really do sort of help us to achieve beautiful results.
Perfectly said. Fran, you also edit Tatler's Beauty and Cosmetic Surgery Guide, which I know is a huge job for you and always a joy to read. Oh. What are your thoughts on surgery? Would you, have you, will you? And if so, who and what is in your personal little black book, so to speak?
Oh my goodness. I mean, yes, you can't edit it. I mean, maybe you could edit a supplement on cosmetic surgery and say, you know what, I know all about this and I still won't, but that is not me. 100%, as and when I need cosmetic surgery. And for the simple reason that I really believe in the power of a surgical procedure. Again, much like the injectables, when safely done and for the right reasons, I fundamentally believe and I have seen the transformational effects that the right procedure can have on one's confidence, their self-esteem, and I think the way that they view themselves. So I think what's hard is that when it comes to something like cosmetic surgery, you it's often hard to say whether you will or you won't until you genuinely have a need for that procedure. So, you know, for example, I have friends who've had a breast reduction, and that was always something that they knew they wanted to have. I personally know now from having a baby, my stomach does not look the same as it did before I had him. It stretches your skin, your muscles are more lax. There are some things that happen with time and with anatomical change to the body, to the face, that a cream alone, an injectable, will never quite fix. It's not to say it's for everybody, and everybody has their reasons as to why or why not they would pursue this route. But for me, I genuinely think if something can make you feel better, why not put yourself in a position where you can make the most of that? I also know I have very genetically sort of heavy upper eyelids as well, and a very small eye. So I can look at my mother, I can look at my grandmother, and I can say they're beautiful women, but I can see that heaviness creeping in. And I know at a certain point that is the procedure that it's not only going to make me feel like myself again, but in all honesty, it's probably going to restore a bit of quality of life as well. You know, when your eyelids start weighing in on your line of vision and they make it hard to see and you're sort of having to read in a different way, I think there's a huge virtue in knowing the person and the procedure that is really going to get you back to an even keel. So yes, Soph knows the surgeon, Naresh Joshi, Mr. Naresh Joshi, who is, you know, probably the most sought after oculoplastic surgeon in the UK. And he's definitely the man that I have earmarked to have my upper lids done when the time is right. I'm constantly consulting him whenever I see him and showing him my eyelids and going, when? He hasn't signed up to it yet, but hopefully in the future. But again, and you know, Naresh is a wonderful example of a surgeon who is technically brilliant, but he's also a human being. He's a surgeon who cares. And I think when I look at my little black book, so to call it, of surgeons, they are all people who fit that mold. You know, they produce a beautiful result, but they also have a rapport with the patient. And I think that's important because this person is going to be a fundamental, a very key figure in this very, very important chapter of your life as you weather that. So, you know, Rajiv Grover is another one. One of the nicest human beings you'll ever meet also happens to be the most exceptional facelift surgeon. So when the time comes, or conversely, when people come to me and say, I'm considering a facelift, he would be my go-to. Brilliant people for fat transfer, Tunch Taraki, for example, for the face. Beautiful, beautiful work. Lovely gentleman. Jackie Lewis, also the kindest, warmest woman, but fabulous when it comes to fat transfer for the breasts, which I also hasten to say is on my to-do list after breastfeeding. So it's sort of making a mental note of these people that, you know, will put you back in the right place physically, but they'll also look after you from a mental and emotional perspective. I think that's really, really key. It's all part of the same picture.
Such an honest and balanced response. Thank you, Fran. What are you most excited by in the world of beauty, whether brands, treatments, technologies, or even anything more broadly connected to wellness?
Yeah, it's a good one, isn't it? And I have to say, sort of when I first started in beauty journalism, it was really that. It was beauty. It was perfumes. It was Clarins skincare. It was Kérastase shampoo. It was all very separate. And what I love now about beauty and the world that I sort of work in and the sort of job that I'm fortunate enough to do is how beauty has evolved into wellness. And it's become so connected. You know, I think more and more we see, for example, makeup that has skincare benefits. And we see skincare that is now merging with aesthetics because it's prescribed by amazing practitioners for pre-procedure, but also post-procedure for the aftercare after you have your laser or your injectable. So that's really, really exciting. Beautiful brands like Orveda, for example, clean, green, sort of French biotech, super chic, but beautiful for the post-procedure nowadays. And I think that's really interesting where these sort of otherwise the unknown brands are sort of getting into a space where they're a little bit more relevant, or the mainstream brands are suddenly feeling a bit more niche. You know, you've got sort of medical aesthetic devices that are now tapping into mental well-being, into women's health. I mean, we can only look at a big, big brand like a BTL Aesthetics, for example. And, you know, they've got devices that are rooted in physiotherapy. They're about restoring your pelvic floor if you go for a device like the Enzella chair. So they're enhancing intimate health. They have a new device that I don't think it's a secret anymore, but it's coming out. It's called ExoMind. It's all about mental well-being. So I think for me, that's what's really exciting. And not just because I think it's how the conversation ought to be sort of well-rounded. Everything should be connected, but because it underlines what we're trying to do at the Beauty Triangle every single day. You know, the sort of power of understanding that it's not sort of like one single silver bullet. There is a different combination approach for everything. And more these worlds are starting to collide. That to me is really exciting. I don't know if you find the same.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Fran. I think these sorts of developments into new technologies, but also the overlap with well-being in every way, I think that's so exciting. True innovation. On a similar note, what about beauty tech and gadgets? And are there any wellness apps that you really rate?
Well, in terms of wellness apps, it's a funny one, isn't it? Because I don't know where I stand on this, you know, sort of wellness and technology. Sometimes I feel that as soon as I pick up my phone, I'm sort of doing the wrong thing when it comes to trying to embrace wellness. But I have to say, in lockdown, I signed up to the Calm app, which is one of the top ranking ones on the sort of Apple store. So it's certainly no sort of new discovery. But I have to say, in moments of anxiety, I found their short meditations really, really helpful, really valuable. And also, if I'm struggling to get to sleep at night, I actually find they do these sort of nighttime stories. And I find myself listening to this story on there called sort of the Himalayan Railway. And I have to admit, I've probably listened to it hundreds of times, and I've never quite reached the end. So I don't know what happens at the end of the story, but there's something very soothing about just listening to a story. And obviously that goes back to, in our most primitive state, sort of in our youngest, most infantile state, sort of being children and loving that routine and that storytelling and just allowing your mind to sort of drift into a different space where it's not running through what it has to do tomorrow, what you didn't do today. So I still fall back on the Calm app. That's been really helpful for me. I've also recently discovered in the big house clear out I did before moving, it's like a Lumia light by Philips. You probably know the one I mean. It sort of looks like a spaceship crossed with a donut.
Yeah.
This sort of circular device. And it basically, you know, lights up when it's time to wake up in the morning, and I have bird song. And I've latched back into that because I find it so much nicer than having what sounds like a sort of fire drill sort of emit and erupt from my phone on the other side of the room, which, you know, you almost start the day feeling anxious, your heart racing in your chest when you hear that. Whereas right now with the light and the birds, I'm like, oh, this is such a nice way to wake up. So yeah, sometimes technology does really enhance wellness.
Yeah, I've seen that and I must get one of those. It looks amazing. I think it would be remiss of us not to touch on makeup, but let's stick to foundation and mascara. What foundations really do it for you at all price points and coverage? For any kind of makeup heroes at all that you just love and would never be without?
Yeah, I agree. So foundation, I love a tinted SPF. I rarely wear foundation, but there's more and more obviously that I now do in a sort of under the lights or on a stage capacity, hosting talks, whatnot. So foundation really has become my friend. I am using one at the moment, which is by Dior. What's it called? Dior Glow Star, Star Glow, something like that. And it's almost like it has an inbuilt highlighter into it. So I'm probably doing it completely wrong, but I slap it all over my face and everything just beams and it glows. And that's sort of lovely. Charlotte Tilbury, I also think, is hands down for the big events where you really need just to look flawless and polished. That's a real favorite of mine. When it comes to the eyes, I'll be honest with you, I don't wear mascara. I sort of admitted to it already. I have tiny eyes. I have very heavy eyelids. And I've always found that if I do try to do mascara, I end up with these terrible sort of barcode lines on my upper eyelids, which very quickly let the side down in terms of looking groomed and polished. So I forego that. I'm also terrible at sort of touching my face and eyes, so I just smear it everywhere. But I've recently got into this sort of like winged eyeliner sort of situation. Not quite the sort of Amy Winehouse sort of winged eyeliner, but a little subtle sort of, I don't know, I'd like to think of it as an Audrey Hepburn sort of little kick on the lash line. So just like a dark brown eyeshadow, a black, so very matte, so a little bit sort of along the lash line, just to sort of try and enhance that. So what am I using at the moment for that? Yeah, MAC or Byredo, actually. Byredo are better known for fragrances, and I love their fragrances. Like Ben Gorham, the founder, can do literally nothing wrong in my mind. But they also do the most beautiful makeup, and it is like a piece of art. They have these eyeshadow compacts that are like molten gold little seashells. You have to look at them to understand what I mean, but they're just, yeah, they're almost too beautiful to use. But the formulas are excellent. So I always have one of those clattering around in the bottom of my handbag.
Great list. Thank you.
I know that, like me, you love spas and wellness, and we regularly compare notes. But can you recommend one spa, one hotel, and one restaurant all in the UK?
Yes, this is an important question, conversation. You're right. We're always comparing notes, aren't we? And it's really good when you sort of find somebody who's on the same wavelength as you and you're like, oh, have you been to this new place? Yeah, add it to your to-do list, because time is precious. And I think we all work hard. And that means that when you have your downtime, that downtime isn't just to sort of go off and enjoy yourself. It really is to restore yourself and to put yourself back together sort of physically and mentally. So the spa that's at the top of my list in the UK right now is Heckfield Place, which it's not a new property. I think Heckfield opened, I want to say 7-8 years ago, maybe it was more than that now. But when it opened, it had a tiny, teeny, tiny two-person sort of room of a spa. It wasn't really worth writing home about. But I think about 2 years ago, they opened their new standalone spa, and it is incredible. You know, it's all sort of like carved from stone, and it sort of like spirals down underground, and it keeps opening up into all of these beautiful rooms and massive treatment rooms that they take your phone from you, which slightly makes me giggle when you first arrive, and they lock it in this little locker. It's all very White Lotus. But the idea is great, because actually somebody like me is otherwise basically there still replying to emails as they're sat in the treatment room having their foot bath and going through their consultation and sort of going, oh, sorry, do you mind if I just bring my phone onto the table with me? And it's such a no-no when you're trying to really sort of get away from that sort of crazy work hamster wheels. So I love Heckfield, and it's beautiful, and you know, it's out in nature, and you can sit outside in a pool, and you've got these like 100-year-old oak trees above your head, and they have the most intuitive therapists. And I think that's fundamental, because you can have the most beautiful spa in the most beautiful surroundings, but if it essentially feels like a paint by numbers massage, you know, two strokes on the right arm, two strokes on the left arm, it doesn't tick the boxes for me. It has to be much more powerful, and the therapists there will really stand out. So yeah, spa-wise, I would say Heckfield. Hotel and restaurant. So actually, well, we've spoken about this, haven't we, Soph? But the Newt, I love. So the Newt down in Somerset, it's a sister property of Babylon Storen down in South Africa, over in South Africa. And it's essentially like a working farm. You know, they have a cider press there, which is beautiful. Babylon Storen sister property has a winery. And so it's really got that farm to fork sort of appeal, and sort of the living off nature sort of thing. But it has beautiful gardens. It's in Somerset. My version of it is slightly skewed, I'll admit, because I went there on the most glorious sort of August weekend some years ago, and the sun was shiny. It sort of felt like you were in the Med, but beautiful accommodation, really elegant, low-key, gorgeous grounds. We were sort of in the converted stables. Again, a really beautiful little spa. And they had this, which I thought was really lovely, a walled garden sort of filled with medicinal herbs. And so you walked around with your therapist, and she had these sort of very antique looking sort of gardening shears. And she would sort of like cut little pieces of herb and flower off as they took your fancy, and they spoke to you in some way or another. And then she created this tincture, this tea from it. And, you know, the garden in a sense was then woven into the treatments you had. So I had the most spooky, actually, reflexology. I love reflexology because it always throws up so many things, and you sort of learn all these things about yourself, which is endlessly fascinating. So that was really, really stand out for me, you know, a hotel with a brilliant spa as well. And then restaurant is a very boring one, but I am obsessed with the River Cafe in London. I just think, again, sort of simplicity. You can go and you can sit outside sort of in the sun on their big, beautiful terrace. You can have the most incredible, simple Italian sort of fare, like burrata or prosciutto or chunks of Parmesan. And it's always the most incredible quality, but super, super simple, which I love. And they do this chocolate nemesis, which is literally like my death row pudding if I ever had to have one. It's I have such a sweet tooth, so anything with chocolate, like it, you've got me every time with it.
I'm loving these answers. And actually, it's clear that you two are friends as well as good colleagues, because Sophie, the places that Fran has mentioned are certainly up there on your favourites as well, aren't they? So brilliant.
We cross paths a lot when it comes to these recommendations. I trust Sophie implicitly.
I can imagine. What about alternative or complementary therapies? Are you into that sort of thing? And if so, who, what, why?
Yeah, definitely. 100% it has a place. You know, as much as it's all about the super sharp science and the injectables, you know, you also need the power of somebody who really understands the human body on a more energetic level. In terms of complementary therapies, I've always been a huge, huge, huge believer in the power of acupuncture. In my early 20s, I didn't have a period for a number of years. I was sort of eventually diagnosed with polycystic ovaries by my gynecologist, and I sort of just managed it for a few years. I had an archaic gynae, I have to say, who essentially said to me, well, it's okay, you don't need a period. And when you want to get, you know, pregnant in later life, we'll put you on some medication and we'll get them back that way, which is absolutely bonkers to think about now because it's just not the school of thought. But I stumbled across in my early days as a beauty journalist, this incredible acupuncturist called Anita Mamiel. And she's very, very well known as a bit of a skin whisperer now as well. You know, she's a very intuitive facialist and she does aromatherapy and sort of Reiki. But her acupuncture is standout. And she was the first acupuncturist I've seen. And I remember she said, oh yeah, there's a bit of a blockage here. And I kid you not, after 3 years of not having my period, the next day after my treatment with her, with Annie, I had my period. And wow. It just seemed spooky. And ever since then, they were like clockwork. And so I've always placed an enormous value in the power of acupuncture, just as a way, not to fix things, but as a way to get the body working as it should again. You know, there's this analogy of a stream with flowing water and then rocks get stuck in it. And I've always sort of believed acupuncture just, it helps to move those rocks out of the way so that the energy can flow again. So I've seen numerous acupuncturists over the years. I've seen Ross Barr, who's wonderful, and Renata Nunez. I'm back to seeing one of my all-time favorites who I've seen again on and off for well over a decade, Jared Kite, he's also a psychiatrist as well, which I find fascinating, that sort of connection between the mind and the body and how they can sort of help balance that. And he does something called five elements acupuncture. So the needles go in and they come out and it's very quick and it's very efficient. And for time poor people like me, I love it. But we also have a good chat at the beginning of the session. So he's a genius. And then otherwise, you know, I love a little bit of manual lymphatic drainage, some reflexology, a sort of incredible sort of facial massage, just something where you feel that the power of somebody's hands and the sort of, I suppose the energy that comes through that human contact as well. I think that's really important.
I absolutely agree. We're all energy.
Exactly. And, you know, connecting with a practitioner who, I think that's why it's also really interesting to try different practitioners and maybe looking back on my list of acupuncturists, for example, that there are so many talented and skilled practitioners, but there's a practitioner for every single patient out there. And there also potentially might be a different practitioner for the individual at different chapters of their life. You know, when I was trying to conceive my son, I saw one acupuncturist. When I was anxious and not sleeping, I saw another one. So I think sometimes it's just about what you as an individual need at that moment in time as well.
And who you feel drawn to as well. And actually, we have Annie coming on the podcast shortly as well. So,
great.
Yeah.
Annie spoke at our festival, the Beach Triangle Festival, back in January. And she was just brilliant. You know, she stood up and she did this sort of breathing exercise. And, you know, I refer to her as a white witch, which undersells how enormously technically skilled she is as well. But she's just magic. That's the only way to describe her.
What about supplements? What do you take? And if you had to pick just a few, bearing in mind we're all different as well, but what would these be?
So supplements, I'm a little bit here and there. Sometimes I take them, sometimes I forget. Sometimes I'm rattling with sort of 24 pills in a morning, and other times, you know, I literally go months without even sort of opening a bottle or a jar. Right now I am taking Nichido, the NAD Plus, which I think we all understand the science now behind NAD, sort of regulating the mitochondria and the ATP, and so just ensuring that we have as much energy in our cells as possible. I can absolutely see my energy when I compare myself in the morning to my 2-year-old who has bundles of the stuff. I can understand in a very simple form that our energy declines over time, and obviously the sort of long-term implications and repercussions that has. So NAD Plus I'm taking, I think that's a building block. World Nutrition, I think, do fantastic supplements. And in the past, I've taken, they've got a great daily nutrient, and they do a great fertility complex when you're sort of in that zone as well. I'm also taking, which I've been introduced to recently, so I am really trying to sort of see if I notice a difference in energy from taking a supplement called Systole, which was developed specifically for women, again, to sort of help with energy and It's chock full of vitamin C and all sorts of other wonder ingredients. But I've been taking that, and it's quite nice. You just stir it into your water in the morning. It's very orangey. It always looks like I'm taking some sort of hangover drink, so I always get a few like weird looks at the office in the morning. But no, that really sort of like perks me up in lieu of a coffee, which is always helpful. And then actually another one at nighttime, which is called Diome Rested. And we actually did an event with them back in October for the Beauty Triangle, which is how I came across them. But a really beautiful supplement that has been developed by some really sort of leading figures in the sort of sleep space. But it's brilliant because it helps you to wind down at night, but it also crucially keeps you asleep, which I think is key for me. You know, I can fall asleep often, but then I might wake up in the middle of the night. And if you wake up at 2-3 a.m. and your mind starts whirling and, you know, running through all of the things that are causing you to stress, then it's not great. So I've, again, instead of periods of overwhelm, when there's a lot going on, when I have very, very busy work calendars, life calendars, that's been something that I've been using quite a lot, actually.
This is such a great list. Thank you so much. What about exercise or your life in exercise? Do you do much?
Oh my God.
And if so, what?
It's terrible. It's terrible at the moment. I keep putting it down to busyness and we're moving and I've got a small child. There's no excuse. The consistent thing I do is walk. Like I walk a good 10 to 15,000 steps every day. You know, I think in London, it's sometimes the best way to get around, the easiest way around. I love popping in a podcast and sort of walking and listening at the same time, really zoning out. It's sort of exercise for the body and the mind, I suppose. But I do love reformer Pilates from the perspective of, I feel like it's rehabilitation, you know, it's really working to strengthen the areas of my body that I know are a little weak. But it's also, again, an opportunity to lie down, stretch, maybe lift a few sort of light weights at the same time. It's probably the one exercise that I feel right now for me at this stage of life ticks all the boxes. Obviously still very conscious that as a woman I still need to be lifting a bit more in terms of weights. So we have our office at 180 on the Strand, and very excitingly they've just opened their gym, so that is where I intend to be going at least once a week, if not more, just to try and benefit from just lifting a weight and probably doing something more targeted in the way of body weights of exercises as well, because, you know, we know as women it's important as we age as well to preserve that muscle mass. It's a hard one, trying to fit it in, trying to balance it. And at the back of my mind, if I'm in the gym, I always think, oh, you know, I should be sending that email, I should be working on that proposal, I should be with my son. You know, it's a really hard one to make yourself prioritize.
Completely agree. For me, it's something I make time for almost every day, definitely Monday to Friday. But and that's why I do it at the start of the day, so that I can prioritize it above and beyond other things first thing in the morning when less has hit my desk or my mind yet. But then I don't have children. So
it's balancing it, isn't it? You also run a very, very successful and busy clinic, though. And, you know, sometimes that's a child in itself trying to manage it. And I think there are always things in our life that are calling on us to prioritize them. And prioritizing ourselves always tends to be the bottom thing of the pile of the list, so to speak. But we also know the value when we do invest that time of doing it. And it's funny because sometimes you can do an hour of exercise and you step away and you think, that was the best use of 60 minutes. And equally, I know if I'd spent 60 minutes on my laptop, I would have just been checking some emails and randomly sort of deleting things and filing away and probably ending up on Instagram doing a quick scroll. Sometimes actually it's the best use of 60 minutes, just getting to the gym or getting to that class and moving your body and sort of doing that good thing for yourself.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. What's your relationship like with sleep? And can you recommend anything sleep or bedtime related? So bath oils, candles, pajamas, and you've spoken about Calm already, but also any other apps that you might use?
I mean, bath oils for one, yes, big time. And there's a brand called Susanna Kaufman, and it's beautiful. You know, she has these alpine bath oils. They're in these sort of like gorgeous sort of like glass bottles, and they've got herbs infused in them and sort of different oils for different seasons, which I love. So you can be very targeted. Epsom salts in the bath as well, I love. In all honesty, I think sort of any brand will do, but I'm using ones by Better You at the moment. And they also do one for kids, which is really good, actually. It's got popping candy in it. So I chuck that in the bath for my son, and he absolutely loves it. So it's such a nice way to almost calm children down as well and sort of get them rested for the night. What else? Yeah, I spoke about the sleep supplements. I spoke about the Calm app. I'd say that's probably in terms of the apps, but I think when it comes to sleep, and we've hosted lots of talks, I have to say, on sleep and sleep hygiene, and it always blows my mind what a popular and well-received event it is, because fundamentally everybody, regardless of their age, their background, their sex, they all want to sleep well. And I guess it's those simple everyday tips, and, you know, no digital devices. I really try to not have the phone anywhere sort of near the bedroom by the time I'm winding down to go to sleep. Reading a good book beforehand, that really, it sedates my mind somewhat, I have to say. I have a very cool bedroom. I have a double mattress topper on a very, very firm mattress. It's all of those little cues, I think, that add up into that sort of expected routine. And we once did a talk with an amazing neurologist called Dr. Oliver Banaff. And he said to me, the most important thing to get a good night's sleep is consistency. So that's the way that you go to sleep every single night, but also the time and the time of morning that you wake up. For example, last night I had a terrible, terrible night's sleep because Felix, my son, was very unwell, bad cough. He was unwell in the middle of the night. He was sick. He came into our room, which you always think is a great idea at the time. And then he flails around like a Tasmanian devil for 3 hours solid and you don't sleep. So I thought I was going to have the most terrible night, and I did. But I also woke up with my little light Philips Lumia alarm clock at the same time. And I have to say, something about the consistency of just waking up at the same time in the morning, no matter how bad the sleep has been, having a green tea first thing just to get a bit of energy in. You know, I'll have to have an earlier night tonight, but sometimes it's just that boring, that consistency, that sort of balanced message that does it every time for me.
And where's your happy place? And can you tell us when and where you were happiest, if that's not too hard a question? And I also wonder whether you do anything specifically for mental health.
It's a good question. My happy place is a place that I've discovered only 2 years ago. It's a beautiful, off the beaten path hotel in Kenya, down on the beach. It's called Kinondu Kwetu. I can't rave about it enough. And it's a place we visited 2 years now. And I feel like we're officially becoming those people who are a little boring because they just return to the same place year after year, which I never said I would do. I was like, you know, travel, holiday, experience, see somewhere new. Now I'm like, and I said it at the beginning of this podcast as well, your time when you work hard is so precious. Your time off, time with your partner, time with your children, time just to have some headspace. I can't rate it highly enough. So now that consistency, going to a place where I know the people, I know where I'm staying, it's gold for me. So it's a very private beach. It's beautiful, sort of rustic, gorgeous sort of like food, staff who've been there for 20 years, little massages on the ocean front. My son goes horse riding there. It's everything you need it to be, and really good G&Ts, you know, just the little things that you need. That is very much my happy place.
And if you know it works, I completely agree. We go to Italy all the goodness. Time because we just know that we love it and it's our happy place. So yeah, good answer.
I think again, you know, just routine for human beings as well. You know, I always think I'm somebody who likes newness and excitement, and I do to an extent, but I think, you know, we also need that regularity, and that's really solidifying for us as humans. In terms of mental health, I'm massively jumping on the journaling bandwagon here, but I really found at the start of this year, I had a very busy January. I mentioned it earlier, we host our Beauty Triangle Festival every January. It's a mammoth undertaking. You know, we have like 500 people there. We have about 25 speakers. We have countless brands. It's massive. It's the biggest thing we do. And so subsequently, January is a period of high stress, brains on overdrive. And I started waking up very early, 5 a.m. early. There's this whole philosophy called the 5 a.m. club. And my husband and I started doing it for that month. And the idea is that you do, I think it's 20 minutes of light exercise, so some stretching, 20 minutes of, you know, meditation, whatever that might be for you, for me, journaling. And then you do 20 minutes of productive work. It might be learning something. And that's where I got into the journaling, diarizing, writing, whatever you want to call it. And it's something I've done throughout my entire life, in all honesty, keeping a diary. But I actually found, rather than doing it at the end of the day and it being this sort of like big cathartic to release, I actually really enjoy sort of in the beginning of the morning, and it's still something I do, just writing down, you know, how I'm feeling about everything, making plans for the day, remembering sort of what there is in life that's positive. Because again, I think we can so often just focus on the road that lies ahead, the to-do list, all the things that need to get done, the busyness. And we so often forget to just sit still, take stock, reflect on what we've done, what we're doing in that present moment, why we should be happy, why we should feel, you know, grateful, to use the word that is so often associated with journaling. But that for me has really helped make sense of the often busy, preoccupied chain of thoughts that's swimming around my brain, especially first thing in the morning when everything is very crystal clear and sharp. So from a mental health perspective, I think that's been hugely valuable, just to bring some perspective to the more emotional side of my brain as well.
You mentioned in a previous interview, Fran, that you use a brand called Nutmeg to manage your ISA and pension. What are your general thoughts and any experience about financial investments? Because I think there's a lot of conversation about women and financial prudence at the moment and learning more about money. Do you dabble in stocks and shares, anything like that?
So for me, a huge turning point in having any sort of fiscal responsibility was when I became self-employed, when I stepped away from a full-time salaried monthly job. And interestingly, you know, I was always the person that was sort of a few pounds away from my overdraft at the end of the month, because I just saw the money coming in every month as, well, it's money to be spent. And that's all you're ever going to do in a salaried job. Whereas as soon as I became self-employed, I had my own business, I became so hyper aware of where the money was coming from, how much was in the savings. I think really that's when I started using Nutmeg properly and realizing the value in paying into my own pension and making sure I maximize that. You know, it's obviously a very good way to get money out of your business if you're putting it into your pension every year. So that has been a huge wake-up call, I think, for me in terms of just being a bit more aware financially of where my money is going, what I'm making it do. Nutmeg, and I'm by no means an expert when it comes to money, investments, the best way to do it. And I still have a lot of learning to do myself on this, but Nutmeg was always a very elegant, sort of sophisticated solution, just to thinking, well, you know, I can create a certain risk profile for myself. And if I've got money, if I've got my pension, my ISA in this, I can trust this platform essentially to be making hopefully calculated decisions on where my money is invested. And to be fair, you know, I don't think I'm the most risk averse. I'm also not the most risk tolerant. I probably fall somewhere in the middle, but it's been nice sort of year upon year to see that tracked and grow. In terms of investment, there's not a huge amount that I am interested in it. I was in a very, very fortunate position when I first moved to London that my parents helped to give me the deposit towards, you know, this is back in sort of 2005, towards my first flat. And again, that was a real learning curve. And from an early age, just being very responsible, I suppose renting out a room, making sure the mortgage was always covered, that sort of thing, especially when you're on minimum wage, sort of in journalism starting out, you know, there's a lot to sort of be juggled and balanced there. But a few years ago, I sort of opened a property company as well to be very tax efficient about that sort of second property as well. And that's something that in partnership with my husband, I'm sort of growing just to have a little bit of a nest egg in the background somewhere. And who knows, you know, having a property in London, maybe my son will one day go to university and that will be a property that he's interested to use, or it's something else that we can just be flexible with. So I think there's different things at the moment, and I'm just seeing which one works and which gives the greatest stability.
Spreading your assets so you have a bit of a portfolio, which sounds very, very wise.
Oh my goodness, you sound like a bank manager. Yes, exactly.
Don't I? Where did that come from? So finally, what's the best advice you've ever heard or been given?
A piece of advice that I was told once, and I fall back on it and I give it to everybody if they ever ask or are interested, is have a plan, but be prepared to flex. Because I think all too often we have this idea of long-term what we want our goals to be, what career we're pursuing, what trajectory we want to be on. Or maybe it's something really simple like the perfect Sunday that you want to have and everything that you plan to do and how great it's going to be. But I think sometimes when we are too focused on what that perfect plan looks like, that we're not open to opportunities. So I think that element of preparing to flex, you know, be open to other things that could come our way, sort of be prepared to have a setback from time to time. Remember that it's all in the plan and it all boils down to experience, and that sometimes it works out for the better if you have different things thrown, different curveballs that sort of maybe potentially put you off course. Sometimes that's a good thing as well. And yeah, I think that's always been something, you know, in my personal life, but also in my professional life, that I've been reliant upon as a general guiding piece of advice.
Thank you so much, Francesca. For all of you listening, you can follow Francesca on socials at Francesca O'Gearman White. And I will spell that. It's Francesca and then It's spelled OGIERMANN and White. And do also follow at the Beauty Triangle with an underscore between each word. And also head over to the website www.thebeautytriangle.com. Thank you again for joining us and for sharing so much, Fran.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me on. It's been such a pleasure to chat with you both and be able to list all the things I love in life.
And that ends this week's podcast. If you want to find out more about me and my work, or maybe book a consultation, head to drsophieschotter.com and you can find me on socials at drsophieschotter. And again, thank you so much for listening.